I'm talking to Chris Jochnik, who is the director of private sector at Oxfam America in Washington, D.C. Chris, you have worked for many years on the issue of corporate accountability, corporate responsibility, and human rights. Now, Oxfam has come up with this new campaign and program of work which looks at corporate taxation. Can you elaborate what it is about and how it plays with and how does it blend with the global human rights agenda?
Sure. Thanks, Salil. The focus on tax is actually part of a larger campaign around inequality that Oxfam launched sometime last year, and it goes by the hashtag of Even It Up on Twitter. We estimate that the Global South or developing countries lose about $100 billion a year every year to corporate tax dodging and tax breaks for corporations, and that is a huge part of their potential revenues to address all sorts of human rights issues, and it far outweighs the amount of official development assistance. So tax dodging, tax breaks, even tax evasion are critical concerns for those countries where Oxfam works and are vitally linked to human rights issues.
So the question I have this, and this takes a step back from this, that the campaign kind of predicates or assumes that the tax revenue, if in the hands of the government, will be used for desired purposes. Am I right?
It's not sufficient to only go after the tax revenue,
right,
but it's certainly a necessary part of the equation. You could analogize it to the efforts in past years around debt cancellation. Mm-hmm. We all knew that that was critical to getting countries back on their feet, but we knew it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, addressing illicit flows that deprive these countries of vital revenue is a first important step, but then it also has to be accompanied by all kinds of other initiatives at the national and local levels to make sure that the revenues then are spent effectively and address human rights issues.
But in that case, it becomes a political project, right? Because what I'm trying to get at here is that if you have this revenue coming into the hands of the government, which is not representative and which does not respect human rights, basically the onus becomes fairly significant for the civil society to demand change from the government, which also has questions about their own vulnerability, the kind of support they get from the international system and so on.
Yeah, definitely. And again, this is part of a larger puzzle. But there's a couple of issues that do get us further along beyond just the actual revenues. Questions of transparency, for example, knowing how much revenues are being collected or are leaving the country are a first critical step so that those NGOs and civil society groups can begin to rally around the misuse and the abuse of tax authorities or of corporate tax evaders. So the transparency piece is a critical part of creating a more amenable environment for civil society groups. And then the other issue is that as you strengthen oversight around taxation and as you start building a tax base, not just from companies but from wealthy individuals, from the middle class, that also starts to help bring more accountability for governments. So part of the problem with the resource curse that we've seen in the past is that when countries depend only on natural resources and don't have a strong tax base, the citizenry tends to be more accepting of corruption or of weak government. But as citizens become able to see how taxes are brought in and how revenue is delivered, that tends to increase calls for greater accountability. And so tax goes to a couple of critical issues. Certainly the revenue issue first, the transparency question, and then hopefully building the blocks for a stronger democratic environment.
So in a sense, what the campaign is seeking to do is, of course, addressing inequalities, but this is EITI++, because EI was focusing primarily on the extractive sector, but here you're going after every corporation or even wealthy individual by argument.
Right, and as we've seen with EITI, that has started off as a voluntary initiative. It's now been baked into laws in the U.S. and the EU, and other countries are now considering it. In the U.S., that would be Dodd-Frank 1504.
Right.
And that requires country-by-country reporting, project-by-project reporting of extractive revenues. Extractive companies have to start reporting on their revenues, those that are listed under the public exchanges. And we want to see that kind of a regime extended to other sectors. And so that we consider that an incredibly important first step, so that this, again, the citizens can start understanding how much money is actually being derived from extractive industries, which is a critical base in many countries. They can start seeing those amounts of money, and they can start demanding that those revenues stay in the country and are spent more effectively.
Now, as I just told you a little earlier, I spent quite a lot of time in India over the winter. And one of the big issues that's talked about in India right now is, of course, this so-called CSR tax, the corporate social responsibility tax, where large companies, or most companies, have to pay 2% of their turnover, I believe, every year towards a kind of a philanthropy budget, which kind of supports development activities and so on, which is seen as an in lieu of more taxation-friendly policies. How do you view that? Is it at all part of your thinking, or is it a separate issue altogether? Because one of the criticisms of that is that this would mean companies will start setting priorities for development and not in a very consultative manner with the local NGOs, or not necessarily in keeping with the national development priorities.
Yeah, it's certainly not core.
Right.
To our calls, and,
right.
And I think I personally would share the concerns that you just raised.
Right.
We've never been particularly big on corporate philanthropy. It's important, it's good, but it's not going to address the kind of power imbalances and
right.
You know, general levels of inequality and lack of strong governance that we really need to get, we need to address in order to get to the roots of poverty. So, I think it's an interesting initiative. Hopefully, it will lead to some good, but I can also see it leading to unintended consequences along the lines that you just suggested, that companies suddenly are seen as the deliverers of development rather than strong governments and civil society.
Right, and over which they don't necessarily have the mandate, expertise, or capacity. That's one of the issues that comes up.
Yeah.
Because a mining company doesn't know how to run a school, for example. Yeah.
And if the mining company wants to run it one year and then decides to leave the next, there's no way to hold it accountable. And that's why we need, we need stronger governance, we need better tax collection, and we need the transparency so that citizens can have a voice on some of those issues. All of that is lost when you turn it over to a company to deliver.
Right. One final question about, what we started out talking about, the campaign itself. Which is that you are, of course, familiar with the guiding principles and the work of Professor Ruggie. Now, in that regard, what would be the things you would tell a company when it's doing its due diligence, when it tries to do its tax planning? And what would you tell an auditing firm or a large accounting firm such as Ernst & Young or PricewaterhouseCoopers? What would you tell them to do so that they take on board their human rights responsibilities more seriously?
Yeah, those are great questions. Companies have the obligation under the guiding principles and other commitments and international standards to do due diligence to ensure that their activities are not undermining human rights. And tax avoidance, aggressive tax planning, or worse, bribery, corruption, all of the things that contribute to illicit flows of money out of a country can negatively affect human rights, of course. So companies, as a first step, have to look at whether the way that they are addressing taxation, their relationships with government officials, whether those kinds of things are undermining human rights, and they would have to put provisions into place to make sure that they're not having negative impacts on human rights. That would be sort of the first step under the Ruggie principles and other documents. And a lot of that has to be done in a more transparent and engaged with stakeholder manner. But then you mentioned also other institutions that have a stronger hand, let's say, in actually dictating the rules around taxation and tax evasion. Accounting firms for one, law firms for another.
Indeed, yes.
And we are seeing now, interestingly, some movement amongst the legal community to start addressing those issues under a human rights rubric, which I think is very encouraging. So in the U.S., the ABA has adopted...
That's the American Bar Association, yes.
The American Bar Association has adopted a standard saying that the Ruggie principles are relevant to law firms and has begun to think through the implications. That's really important. The International Bar Association has also recently come out with a report addressing the very question of taxation and the role of law firms and of companies. So I think you raise a really good issue there. And a big part of that is how are those companies involved in their own operations having an impact, but also how do their relationships with industry groups, with governments, their ability to influence and dictate the rules, how is that also part of the problem and impacting human rights negatively? And I think their accounting firms and law firms have much to answer for. So it's important that you raise that issue.
Thanks so much indeed, Chris, and all the best with the campaign, and hope to see you soon.